Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Westside Visions on blogtalkradio.com. I am Brother Tony Bullock with my co-host, Sister Eileen Reed. Sister Reed, are you there?
Oh, yes, I'm here, Brother Tony. It's going to be a good show.
Yes, it is. I'm hoping that we will see what we can do today. And for those of you who may not come in and listen to us, that call-in number, I'm going to give it to you at the top of the show. It's 563-999-3043. And today, Sister Reed and I participated in voter registration drive because, you know, you hear us talk about it a lot here on Westside Visions, that your vote is your voice. And that is the one thing we do believe in. And Sister Reed came up with a very bright idea to start getting people registered. And that is something we will be continuing to do as we get closer into the election year of 2024. Sister Reed, you want to speak on it?
Sure. Well, because of the social justice work that's being done at Free AME Church here in Fresno, California, 806 Collins on the Golden West Side of Fresno, you know, we have the idea, those of us who attend the church and under the tutelage of Reverend Dr. Floyd D. Harris, to have a voter registration drive. So we're trying to not just talk about it, but to be about it. And I was really not surprised, but I was honored to learn that most of the black people that came out today, the volunteers as well as the people on the food giveaway line, were already registered. These are black people. And there might have been a couple of Spanish speakers who wanted to register. My Spanish stinks, but there were people in line. There was an older Hispanic gentleman in line who offered to translate if anybody wanted to actually sit down and fill it out, but that didn't happen today. There was a long line of people at the food giveaway, and that was a good thing. They're also, Free AME is also starting their coat drive, so if anybody has coats or shoes, new socks that they want to donate, please do so at 806 Collins on Thursdays. So from, I don't know how long we're going to be doing this. I'm hoping for the duration. Brother Tony and I are going to be out there at least an hour before the food giveaway starts, and that starts at 11. So that means we'll be out there by 10 with our setup to assist people in signing up to register to vote. Now, let me just say this, my last little bit on this, on the voter registration table. If you or anybody that you know is formerly incarcerated and you have questions about whether or not you can vote, check with your parole officer. Find out if you can vote. If you can vote, you can vote, or research it yourself, and you need a place to fill out the form, come to Free AME on Thursday at 10 o'clock, and Brother Tony Bullock and I will be more than happy to assist you if you need assistance, but we'll have the forms and we'll have the pens there to do it, because there's a certain way that you have to do it, or the Fresno County clerk will kick it back. And for those of you who do get a kickback, please don't worry, because we at Free AME and Fresno Freedom School, we don't give up. So if it gets kicked back, we'll keep going until we get it right and you get registered to vote in the upcoming 2024 election. Brother Tony?
Yes, indeed. We are there to work with you to make sure that you get to use your vote and your voice, that you are able to speak out at that ballot box. Yes, indeed. And I want to thank Pastor Harris and Sister Reed for coming up with this idea, because a lot of people will overlook it and think that, well, you know, they was incarcerated, so are they just out here get free stuff? They don't care about voting. No, yes, people do. They care about being able to speak their part. And also, while we're talking about what's going on over at Free AME, this upcoming Sunday, right now, Free AME Ministries is doing a spiritual warfare series. Now, last Sunday, we had Pastor Adam Deal come to speak, and he spoke on pride. This Sunday, we will have D. Clayton coming out to speak about battling against witchcraft.
Uh-huh.
He will be in the pulpit this upcoming Sunday. Church starts at 11:30. And if you don't have a church home or you would just like to come out and hear what's being said, please come on over to 806 Collins. We would be more than happy and to welcome you there, where you can worship in peace and freedom.
Yes. Well said, Brother Tony. And people should know that breakfast is served from 9 until 9:45, we learned today. And it was said last Sunday in church that this coming Sunday they are going to be serving a continental breakfast. So there'll be juice, there'll be coffee, I believe, and there will be pastries, that type of thing. So, you know, you can be fed physically as well as spiritually. And somebody said something last Sunday, Brother Tony, that I really took to heart, because they say, you know, they said it's always good that we, you know, when we're in the pulpit, we talk about God and Jesus and the good book, and we read from the Holy Bible and scriptures. But it's a whole different thing when you start talking about the devil and evil in this world and his works, and you bring the devil to bear and hold his feet to the fire. I was like, wow.
Yes,
that
indeed.
That is an interesting concept, and I could get behind that. So anyway, Brother Tony, back to you. And what we got going on for what we're doing right now. But I it's a series that I think it's time has come, and I'm looking forward to all the sermons. I really am.
Yes, I am. I'm looking forward to hear each of the speakers and what they are going to be talking about, because we got Sister Crystal Joyce coming up. Sister Wanda is coming up. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing these different types of speakers and
yes,
that continental breakfast.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I got excited, Brother Tony. The fifth Sunday and the last Sunday is Sister Omi Comer, who's going to be doing the summary. And you know that's going to be fire. I'm sorry. You were
yes.
saying about the continental breakfast.
Yeah, but you are right. Sister Omi Comer is coming. And you best believe I will be front and center, because when it comes to Sister Comer, she goes way back with me, and it's almost like listening to an elder family member. She was very instrumental in mine and my wife's life, and I will always, always have that respect for her. It was great to see her husband and her youngest daughter today. That just made my heart feel some kind of way. It was one of those things where it just brought a smile to my face. But I am looking forward to hearing her speak. But, yeah, the continental breakfast will be real good, because, like you said, there'll be pastries, there'll be coffee, there'll be juices, there'll be fruit. And like you said, you can get fed not only physically but spiritually, and that'll be a good way to go into the sermon.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It's going to be a
absolutely.
Good
Absolutely. And, you know, Sister Reed, I'm a football fan, always have been from a little dude. And today, while watching tonight's game between the Bears and
Who were they playing?
Yeah, I was getting ready to tell you that. between the Bears and Washington, found out that Dick Butkus had passed at 80 years old. And
yeah.
Dick Butkus was that guy. When I was young watching football, the football that Dick Butkus played, they don't play no more. Football now is about entertainment. Football back then was football. It was about the power and the glory. These guys now, they about getting paid and performing. But one of the things that I loved about Dick Butkus was when he came on that field, he gave us all. But as he got older, one of the things I'll always remember is him in the commercial with that old lady Claire, the Wendy's commercial, talking about where's the beef? And her making fun of his name, Dick Butkus.
Yes, yes. You know, I don't know if it's really true, but every time I hear Dick Butkus' name, I always think about Sylvester Stallone and his dog. You know, the dog that he named Butkus. And and I was like, oh wow! But you know, it was really a blessing, I'm sure, for his family and friends that he went in his sleep. And you're right, Brother Tony. They don't play that kind of football anymore. They don't play that kind of baseball anymore. The kind of baseball that falling in love with. And we were talking today with this brother who is obviously our age or a little bit older, and we were talking about wrestling pro, you know, and you know, names like Kenji Shibuya and Tepper Gomez and Ray Stevens and all these people. And we just had, all three of us had a good laugh about that because we knew it was entertainment and fake, but not all of it had to be fake. I mean, those guys' bodies took a slam, you know. But things are not the same. The modern era has come to pro sports. And I'm so glad you brought up Dick Butkus for people who knew and loved him, because he was one of the first people who did a great transition from football into acting and was successful at it.
Yes,
very
he was.
So,
you know, and he was just an all-around good guy. Not only, you know, he played hard on that football field, but he was just an all-around good guy because he did a lot for the city of Chicago, for the young people of Chicago, and several other places where he lived. So he was the great ambassador for the NFL.
Yeah, he was. He certainly was. So,
and
80 years old, though, that's a blessing.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And like you just said, you know, things have changed. The modern era has transitioned a lot of stuff. And the same thing can be said about our politics now. You know, today you were talking Tuesday about them old school Democrats and them old school Republicans. One of the things that they did back in the day was, you may be a Democrat and I may be a Republican, but at the end of the day, them men and women sat down and talked about what was happening in the country and found a way to work bipartisanly to make things better. It wasn't about we're going to shut the country down if we don't get our way. We're going to try to railroad somebody if we can't have what we want. If somebody ain't thinking like us, they got to get out the party. It wasn't that kind of party. They didn't get down like that. And at the end of the day, when they got through holding business, they'd go out and have drinks together and sit down and talk.
Exactly. Exactly, Brother Tony. You know, everything that's happened in the last 8 months in this country makes me think about old school people like Tip O'Neill, Sam Rayburn, LBJ. when he served in the Senate. And those were real statesmen. They were statesmen. They were putting their love for a country and for the U.S. Constitution ahead of everything else. And so I was excited when I heard that we were going to do this particular show, because people don't understand. I don't think Joe Q. Public and Joan Q. Public on the street understand that American democracy is at risk right now, that we are talking about the destruction and the burning up of our U.S. Constitution. And I don't think most people realize that, because now people are starting to ask, okay, well, what if Trump gets reelected? What happens then? And if that does happen, by some strange twist of fate, we got a big problem on our hands, the rest of us who are out here living our lives in real time. So, you know, Brother Tony, you come up with the best kind of topics for us to talk about. And I really hope people wake up. I hope they wake up. I'm not trying to be insulting, but they have to get more involved in watching what's happening with our government. Because that's the way the Founding Fathers set it up. And I love the U.S. Constitution. I've said this many times on the show. When I learned about it in eighth grade, I kind of fell in love with the document. You know, my youthful being naive in the eighth grade and thinking, oh, okay, well, this is a beautiful document. It was written by smart men, blah, blah. And then on the other hand, I was only three-fifths of a person back then. Wait a minute. But still, three areas of government, Brother Tony, and our American democracy is under threat. It's, quite honestly, it's scary.
You're absolutely correct, and this is why you have to keep your eyes open and pay attention to what's going on. And mm-hmm. a lot of you have to honestly stop with this. Well, that's a white folks problem. No, that's an American problem. If you live in this country, that is everybody's problem. That is everybody's problem. You have got to get out of this. That don't concern me. Well, yes, it does, because the bottom line is this. When you go to that ballot to vote, you have got to know exactly what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't stand for something, you will fall for anything.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. So I hope people understand that in order to make this country work, especially for black folks, brown folks, people of color folks, transgender folks, we have to have an educated electorate. And I'm not saying you need a PhD. I'm saying just listen to the news and not Fox News, because that's not news. Listen to the news. Make your own decision and your own opinion about what's going on, and then act accordingly. You know, I was asked to speak at a class where a professor, Deborah Saxton, about a couple of 3 years ago. And what I told her anthropology class was this: find what you care about and then fight like hell to make it better. You know, whatever your thing is, I love people. I have a special love for my own black people. And I don't see anything wrong with that. I'm always going to advocate for my people. I'm always going to speak out for my people are being wronged. And that's just me. The environment is your thing. Then read about the environment. Find out what the government is doing about it. If abortion rights is your thing and women's health, then do that. But you have got to stay engaged. You've got to read newspapers online or however they do it now. I like them in my hand, but that's me. I'm old school. So, Brother Tony, we try so hard on this show to tell people that they matter. You know, what they're thinking and what they're doing, it matters. You know, everything. I mean, this is a summer of strikes, okay? So people are disgruntled. I get that. And you should be, and you should strive for your rights. In the meantime, look at what's happening in the government. We got 45 days, I think, to get this blankety-blank stuff right. So people get ready. You know, there's a train a-coming. I don't necessarily want to be on the train going to a concentration camp because 45 has somehow gotten reelected. I just knew. They're going to have to kill me to take me. But
as Betty Davis said, and she was known for saying this, hang on, it's going to be a bumpy ride. And that's a true statement. And, you know, there comes a point in time where there has to be no quitting you. You just can't give up. You can't just go, woe is me. I don't know how it's going to work out, so I'm not going to do anything. No. You have to fight to the end.
Yep.
You have to fight to the end. And, you know, you say that I come up with great – it's not that I come up with great topics, but I'm going to tell you what I do. I sit and look at what's happening in the tree we live in. Okay, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that next week.
Uh-huh.
There. We see it right before our eyes. Ain't no need to act like it's not happening. So,
yeah.
With that being said, our topic for tonight. And I just thought this because we've talked about everything else, and with Speaker Patrick McHenry sending the GOP home for a week to soothe their wounds and play the blues and, you know, try to console each other about Kevin McCarthy being voted out by them,
mm-hmm.
I decided that we would talk about who would step up next in the presidential succession line, should we lose the president and the VP? Would the Speaker of the House step in with no problem, or, and I'm just playing the devil's advocate, or would these other agencies try to rush in there and take power, like someone did once upon a time when a certain Republican president got sick and the Secretary of Defense decided that he was going to bypass the vice president and take over.
Well,
I know you remember this.
I do remember it. I don't know if the listeners know about this. You should share that episode. Talk about it.
So, you know, I'm just wondering, you know, where are we going to be should something like that go down? You know, I'm one of those folks, I would like to think that because we have it set up and that's the way that it was set up, if you look through the slideshow, you will see that I put that information in there.
Uh-huh.
And I would like to think that everybody would go by what is on paper. But see, this is America. In 2023, and people have proven already that they don't like playing by the rules anymore.
Well, yeah.
They don't like going by. Yeah, they don't like going by what we've already agreed to do.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate, especially for those people who have taken an oath of office and now, you know, have decided that they're not going to adhere to that. I think that, you know, that is a big problem. And this is why we're saying that American democracy as we know it is at risk. You know, this is how fascism starts, y'all, for those of us who might be wondering how that gets started. All you have to do is look at what happens around the world. I mean, most people will go directly to Germany post-World War I. And that's a good example you know, the country is beaten into oblivion by a world war. The people are dejected. They have no money. You know, they got a lot of dead folks. They got a lot of decimated cities. And along comes Hitler, telling them that they are the greatest thing walking the earth, that they are Aryans and they are the best. And everybody else is just nothing, especially, here comes the scapegoat, Jews and black people and gay and union, you know, organizers. So you got to have a scapegoat. You got to have willing ears to hear all this stuff. And then he starts working on the national psyche. The same thing is happening in this country, y'all. People are falling for the 45 snake oil salesman okey-doke. Make no mistake about it. This is a cult movement, demagogue kind of thing going on in America. This populism is going to kill American democracy. And I could go on about, you know, other, you know, governments who have fallen to stuff like this, you know, General Pinochet. We could talk about all of that. We could talk about the Sandinistas. We could talk about a lot of places. Argentina.
Well, yeah, you had a lot of places. Yeah, you had a lot of places that did it. And come to think of it, you had Mussolini in Italy who teamed up with Hitler. So,
sure did.
Yes, you had folks fall for the okey-doke. And then in the end, you saw what happened to Mussolini. His people finally decided, you know what? He sold us a bag of rotten eggs. It's time to take him out. And they did.
And they did.
Quiet as it's kept, the Germans, as the Nazis start losing the war, they decided it's time to take him out. And they tried to assassinate Hitler several times.
Yes, they did.
To the point of where he supposedly blew his own brains out. And I wasn't there, so I can't say what really happened. But the claim is he took himself out. I believe someone else took him out.
Well, it would be hard for me to believe that he would go out willingly, or that he would, kill himself, because he just didn't have that kind of character. So
no,
yeah,
he reminds you of 45.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from on that. But and to this day, sitting in court, mumbling under his breath, 45 is holding on to all these big lies, but he's about to get his legal comeuppance, so to speak. And this is going to be fun to watch.
A lot of stuff going on with that guy. So, so we're going to jump into tonight's topic.
All right.
Which, as I said, was who next in the presidential succession would take over should, you know, we lose the president and the VP. And the reason why I said and the VP, we know that, we know that Kamala Harris would be an awesome president. Now, a lot of y'all don't like her. Basically, you don't like her because she's a black woman. I'm just going to tell the truth and say the devil. Shown you that she can do this job very well.
Yes, indeed.
She supports the president. When she was in the Senate, she took no shorts. When she was in California, and people love to point at that, oh, she locked up black people. That was her job. Because I find it funny that when California had white AGs, no one said a mumbling word about the black people who were getting locked up. See, same job, just different people.
Right. So, yeah, and different rules.
You know, Kamala Harris, if it came to it and had to be president, I believe she would do a damn good job. But unfortunately, her and the president right now have been crossed out. So I'm going to do that thing that Marvel does. Marvel has this series that's called What If? So tonight, you and I are going to do a What If? You know, what if there was no Joe Biden and no Kamala Harris, and we just had the next group of folks left? And with that said, with Kevin McCarthy being gone, the first person up would be none other than Patrick McHenry.
Mm-hmm.
Who, you know, got moved into that position when they took Kev out. And from what I'm hearing and understanding is, he is a very staunch ally of Kevin McCarthy. He proved that by going after Nancy Pelosi, saying she had to give up her office. And now it has come up that Kevin actually called him and told him to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
which proves
that
Republican
that right
no
there,
plan.
Yeah, that right there lets me know this kind of guy is not the kind of man I would want for president.
Right. Right.
Because
he doesn't
seem capable of standing on his own two feet.
Right. Well, if he's friends with Kevin, and Kevin being a chowderhead, dunderhead, you know, person, that speaks volumes. I mean, you know, the company you keep, especially in Washington. So, McHenry, wow, hell of a placeholder. But I guess he's better than somebody like Jim Jordan, you know, who was under consideration, because they had several people that they were looking at. But I
well,
think
fortunately.
No, go
yeah,
ahead.
Fortunately, Jim Jordan is not someone we would have to worry about because he's not in that succession line.
Mm.
See, the only thing about that comes into play is what we were talking about, someone trying to make a play to become president.
Let's back up for a minute because I might have this wrong, because when McCarthy got kicked out, they still had to put somebody in as Speaker of the House, and that had to be voted on by the House member.
Right. Right. And I understand that. But currently, that position is being held by Patrick McHenry.
Okay. I see what you're saying. All right. Go ahead.
He is the temporary holder. He actually has the powers Kevin had, except he can only do certain things. Call the House to order, adjourn the House, and talk about resolutions. But if something of this nature was to happen, he's the guy sitting in that position. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying, and that's why I was talking about how he got wound up in that position. But go ahead, I'm listening.
He wound up in that position because they voted him in temporarily.
Yes, but he would not be eligible because he's a placeholder, and that's my point. He would be an acting president, but he would not. Okay, I don't think it would.
No, I understand. What you're saying, but see, here's the other side of the coin. Since you say that he wouldn't be eligible, I'm gonna tell you who would be: Patricia Lynn Murray, who is the pro tem of the United States Senate and she's a Democrat.
Yeah,
and. So she would definitely be able to take that position.
Right. So exactly. Because that's how it goes. If you, I mean, and this comes from the updated Presidential Succession Act of 1947, because there's only been three changes in the act since 1789. I think it started in 1789, and then they had an update in 1886, and then they refurbished it in 1947. Mm-hmm. All right. I'm with you.
Are you sure you're with me? Because you know me, I have no problem with you seeing it the way you want to see it.
You know what? This is your thing, and
stop. This ain't my thing. This is our thing.
Well, if you know something I don't know,
please put it out there.
Well, I was trying to put it out there. Here's what I was saying about McHenry and the fact how he got to be this placeholder and how you didn't have to be a member of the House of Representatives to hold that speakership. I mean, somebody even threw out there, some MAGA mind game player was looking at Trump to be Speaker of the House. And, you know,
that was Marjorie Taylor Greene.
That is going on. Exactly. And so
What is 45 going through right now?
Well, you know what he's going through. Tell the people.
He has those indictments. And when you're holding those indictments, you cannot be the Speaker of the House.
Wow. This is what I'm talking about. This is
according to Newsmax. No, go ahead. Mm-hmm. You were saying what?
No, I was saying this is why I was trying to share with the listeners about the eligibility of the speakership of a person who is in the succession line to be president, acting president, not, you know, becoming a president, but the acting president. You know, they wouldn't make the cut because they got too much baggage. So, but this is the chaos that we're going through, you know, what everything else is going on in this country. So people need to understand about the successionship. It's just not going down a list. It's all the stuff that goes on behind it. And all the people, there's only two positions where the Democrats are not declared on this list of succession, and that would be Secretary of Defense and Attorney General.
I looked at who was sitting in each position, and you have to look at the folks that Biden has in office right now, because that's who it applies to right now, the folks that he has in his cabinet and in his different agencies.
Mm-hmm.
But the Speaker of the House has always been considered one of the folks in that position. And like you said, in McHenry's case, if it fell to him, he would just be, because he's a pro tem, he would be an acting president, meaning that a president would be elected to replace him.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best. That would be the best he could do.
That would be the best he could do. And remember that the pro tem position is really an honorary position. All it says is that, you know, as a pro tem, normally, it's the longest serving person in the Senate. So it's like an honorary kind of, you know. I remember when Strom Thurmond was a president pro tem, and he was like 98 years old. So, yeah,
good
we
old Strom. Girl, what made you dig Strom Thurmond up? Because, man, you talk about, you know, they talk about Feinstein staying till the end. Strom Thurmond stayed till the end of the end of the end.
The bitter end. He sure did. And he was somebody. Y'all can look it up, listeners. Strom Thurmond was somebody who was a racist. I don't know if he was a misogynist, but I knew he did not like black people. We're talking about George Wallace standing in the schoolhouse doorway saying, you know, you N-words can't come in here. That kind of person, he was a president pro tem of the Senate. And Brother Tony's correct. He stayed till the bitter, bitter end, till the last drop was pulled out of the cup.
Yeah. And the killing part is for somebody who was so racist, and he truly was a race. He was racist, but had a black daughter.
Well, yes,
had a daughter by a black woman. But see, that goes back to what I've heard you talk about time and time again. They love to talk about y'all, but they definitely want to sexualize y'all.
Exactly. So, you know, and this is that's what I'm saying. You know, you can't have it both ways, but this is how they do black women in this country. And I remember when his daughter came out and, you know, oh, it's supposed to soften the way some people felt about Strom Thurmond, not me. George Wallace. After George Wallace got shot and, you know, was disabled, then he loved black people. Really? Really? Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, all of a sudden, that was deep.
I know.
That. You know, and, you know, you have to be honest about it. That was like, what? He like black people now?
Mm-hmm. No, some of us didn't buy it, but, you know, for those who about racial stuff, I say good on you. You know, people should forgive one another. But when you have that kind of hatred and vitriol that these people were spewing out and spitting out about black people, and we must remember, this is the era that these people were in power where they were spraying water hoses on little children, sicking police dogs on black people, lynching, burning, terrorizing, you know, domestic terrorists of the first water. So, yeah, this is why I'm really like this subject tonight, because we have to look carefully. We have to look carefully at who's being elected and why and all that stuff, and that those shenanigans that are going on right now about gerrymandering and how the courts are saying, okay, we can't trust y'all to do it, so we're going to do it for you.
You know what, Sister Reed, I'm glad you just spoke on that, because I just read a blurb today. Our good friends in Alabama, they're getting ready to be upset because the courts have said they can say what they want, but they have to use this map, and they have to use it now.
Yep.
And you know what that means? That a lot of those gerrymandered districts that been becoming Republican got a very good chance of becoming Democrat.
They are heated.
They are mad as wet hens down there.
And they should be, because Brother Tony, how are you gonna have a state that's 3/4 blacks and only have one predominantly black voting district? They can't make it make sense. Yeah.
So ain't no need of them getting mad, because here's the bottom line. If you would have done what you were supposed to in the beginning, it never would have came to this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've talked about this time and time again. Alabama is one of the bastions of civil rights. You know this.
Yes.
Birmingham used to be known as Bombingham. A lot of good black folks lost their lives behind civil rights in the state of Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
Fighting for rights, fighting just for the simple right to vote.
Yes.
Here it is, 2023, and we are still fighting the fight to vote.
Mm-hmm. And this is what we try to tell people all the time, Brother Tony, is that if it's not that important, why are they trying to keep us away from it? If voting was not important, and voting maps were not important, why is it that these people are working so hard to make sure that we don't get a chance to vote? So I say, let's flip that script, and every black person in America that is eligible to vote, votes. And, you know, I don't want to admonish people who are like, I don't care, it don't matter to me. Well, you know, then when whatever happens, happens, keep your trap shut, because you didn't participate anyway, so what do you care?
Exactly.
You know?
You know, that's one of the reasons why I vote, I stay involved, so that I will have a right to speak out about things that are that ain't right and not going on.
That's right.
See, I love that saying of, if you don't vote, shut it up. Keep your mouth shut.
That's right.
Because when you don't vote, exactly, like you say, when you don't vote, you can't have it both ways.
No. And we're going to keep hammering this, Brother Tony. This is one thing I really like about our show. We are going to talk about voting until the cows come home. So if y'all don't want to go recruit somebody and you're tired of listening to us talk about it, I apologize. But we're not going to stop. We're not going to stop until every black person who can vote gets that franchise. You can put any spin on it you want. Oh, I'm going to do this to annoy white people. Okay. I'm going to do this because, you know, whatever. Because my kid is in school and I don't like the school board. Okay, do that too. Because what do we say, Brother Tony? Everything from dog catcher to president. We need
you to vote on it. So you know what? I was sitting here looking at the succession list.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is 18 agencies on here. I mean, 18 people.
Mm-hmm.
From the president to the Secretary of Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting here looking at the list, and I'm thinking, damn, that's a lot of people to have to go through should something go wrong.
Right.
And, you know, I'm the kind of person, I like to sit back and think about different scenarios because, again, this is America. And it's not the America I knew growing up. This is a brand new animal.
Yep.
And there is no telling what may go on at any given time. If somebody would have told me that a Speaker of the House would be voted out by his own damn party, I'd have told them they was lying. But yeah,
well, that
we watched it happen the other day.
Yeah, it's a new time and a new space and a new era, and these are different kinds of politicians. They're different kind of politicians. We can thank Donald Trump.
Yeah, and I saw people on different platforms like Twitter and Spoutable and Facebook and different spots talking about laughing and joking, but it's not really a laughing and joking matter, okay?
Really?
You may not vote Republican, but that still affects you. That affects us. That affects our government.
It affects everyday living. I mean, just look at the price of food right now. Look at the price of gas. Look at the stock market. And look at the fact that if this chaos goes on long enough and the government does get shut down in the next 45 days, what is that going to do to the national credit rating? We've already been demoted on that part. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to see some fascist police rolling up in my block talking about, let's go, Ms. Reed. I don't think so, because these things could happen. This is not science fiction or a horror show. We're in October for Halloween. This is happening in real time. Brother Tony. And I just want to say this before I shut up about what I just said. This line of succession, especially the top tier ones, so many of these people live in Washington, D.C. and the surrounding areas. What if a nuclear bomb hits and the first half of this list gets annihilated? Then what are we going to do? So we're
exactly.
going to keep going down.
And that's exactly what I was talking about. See, you follow me on this.
Yeah.
What happens if we get down to number 17, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Or number 14, the Secretary of number 14, the Secretary of Transportation. Who is our Secretary of Transportation?
Pete Buttigieg. The gay guy that's married with two kids.
You know what? And I think Pete could pull it off.
Oh, I think Pete could, too, because he already ran for president at least once. And he's pretty savvy. He knows that he's got to work on infrastructure. He understands, you know, certain things. I would even take Deb Haaland. She's number 7, so she's kind of high up on the list, Secretary of the Interior, and the first Native American to hold that position, even though that so-called department has been in charge of Native American affairs for a long time, at least since the Trail of Tears debacle. Yes.
Sitting there at number 8. I believe, you know what, I believe she could pull it off with no problem. She appears to me to be a strong woman. And you know, during her nomination, they tried to come at her with everything but the kitchen sink.
Mm-hmm.
And she was standing there flat-footed waiting on them.
Yeah. And I'm sure she understood the ramifications of everything being thrown at her because they survived a lot. If it were left up to Europeans, they would have already been wiped out because they were a nuisance. But still they live. Still they rise.
But see, here's the thing. How can you be a nuisance in your home country?
Well,
how can you be
Yes, I agree with you, brother.
How can you, you know, be a nuisance in the country that you have managed and in touch with nature and the animals? European settlers have always come through and want to take over everything, want to steal all the resources, and steal the Indians. Help their greedy butts survive.
Exactly. You know, a lot of people, well, maybe they do. I don't know. I can't speak on that. But I will say people should know that our U.S. Constitution is based on a Native American document where it was in the Northeast pack of, I can't remember all the tribes, but I know the Algonquins were part of it. And the U.S. Constitution is based on their beliefs, you know, that all these tribes
right.
are going to come together, they're going to work together and all this. What I wish I could remember, Tony, is the name of the book that I had about Native Americans who were like, you know what, let's just kill all these white people and get it over with. Because they're not going to stop, and we already see what they're about. And this was, like, verbatim discussions that different tribes had about what we're going to do about these colonialists who are coming over here as settlers and want to take over everything. And the people who were like, well, let's give them a chance, won out, and here we go, right now, up to the present.
Mm-hmm. You had about 20, 30 tribes that all came together with representatives and had this big powwow, or for those of you who don't understand powwow, this big meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And they sat back and they talked, and they talked about the folks coming from across the water.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. There was a group that was like, you know what? We've allowed too many, too much already. Let's just go on mm-hmm. and take them out while we can. But then, of course, you had those others who felt like, hey, maybe we can work this out. It'd be a peaceful thing. We can live together. Because in the back of their heads, they always thought we can live together. See, that thing of them saving, that they made friends with the pilgrims, no, they saved the pilgrims. Because the pilgrims were destined to die out. They were destined to die out. And the American Indian came along and saved. They worthless behinds.
Yeah, they did. They certainly did. You know, because, and so isn't it ironic that the same people that they saved, you know, certain ones of them, certain countries turn around, they're giving Native Americans blankets that are diseased with smallpox. They
yeah.
are, you know, and even to this day, listeners, even to this day, we have this problem where there are missing and murdered indigenous women that nobody is saying a mumbling word about. And this is going on nationwide
right
and
now.
All over the community. Because it's in Canada, too. Right now.
Yeah, right now this is happening.
So.
Especially in Alaska.
They got a big problem in Alaska. So we have to speak on these things, and I know that you think that this discussion has gone far afield, but the thing is that we are connecting the dots because everything is connected to everything else. Make no mistake about it. When you don't hear about missing and indigenous women being murdered and missing on the mainstream news, why is that? Because normally when it bleeds, it leaves. But, hey, these are indigenous women. These are Native American women, and nobody gives a you-know-what about them. Let's just be real, because that's what it is. The industry, the mainstream media has decided that they are not important. Now, if it was a Becky or a Karen that were being missing and murdered in that number, oh, my God, the National Guard would be out. They'd be activated in every state to find out what the problem is. Homeland Security would be on the case. The Department of the Treasury with their Secret Service would be on the case. Every law enforcement agency would be on the case. So excuse my rant, y'all. Let me hush. Brother Tony?
Oh, no, you was doing 1,000. Just keep it moving. But, no, you're right.
No.
And we have you know, we've seen it time and time again where when it comes to minority women, it's like the ball get dropped. But let it be somebody blonde-haired and blue-eyed, and they saddling up the troops. Everybody from the 82nd Airborne to those with dogs that track folks are coming.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed.
But, you know, that's, again, those are the things that happen here. So, but, you know, I look at this presidential line of succession, and it's like, I always wonder, you know, it's always the president, the vice president. And I think back to, like, when Spiro Agnew was vice president and got in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And back then I thought, okay, well, he resigned. Why didn't they just pull up the Speaker of the House to become the vice president instead of, ooh, let me go out here and find somebody right quick?
Mm-hmm.
I always wondered about that.
Right. So who do you think would have been better? How could they have done it better? I guess that's my question about the choosing.
You know, to be honest, I don't know because I don't remember who all was, you know,
Because, okay, so Agnew got in because Nixon resigned. Am I remembering this correctly? Okay, Brother Tony, I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay. Agnew was already vice president, but he was like 45. He had some real shady dealings outside the office that came back to haunt him.
Right.
And it became that thing of, you really need to resign or you're going to go to prison. That's how he ended up losing office. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't Rockefeller take his place?
Yeah, he did. Briefly. Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
He did. Yeah, he did.
I was trying to remember who had taken his place, but I think I remember Rockefeller taking his place.
Yeah, he did.
But see, that's the whole thing. That's why I came up with this thing about succession. It's like, what, you know, and I'm like you. You just brought up a good point. Most of these politicians live in the D.C. area. What happens if there's a, like you said, a nuclear strike or some kind of plague or just a big bomb goes off and we lose half of these folks?
People have been talking about this ever since 9/11 because, listeners, I'm sure you will remember that on September 11th, I think it was like 2000, you know. Anyway, on September 11th, there were multiple sites that were hit, right? It wasn't just New York's World Trade Towers. It was also the Pentagon. And, you know, and Americans, you know, really stepped up to the plate and acted during that because I'm remembering the guy on the plane saying, let's roll. Because they knew what was going on. When they found out what was going on, they're like, okay, well, we have to act. Now, these are everyday people. These are not elected officials. They made all the difference, though, in how that played out. So I often wondered, too, Brother Tony, how it would work if these people got taken out. And, I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of times the president and vice president do not travel together. You know, they're in separate areas and things like that. And I remember a time when people were even looking at, we're talking the olden days now, when people were looking at, you know, the head of the Supreme Court, you know, maybe stepping in and being in that line of succession. But the thing is that Supreme Court justices are appointed, like cabinet members are appointed, and they're not
people.
And that's a problem when you're talking about you want to adhere to the Constitution and that the people get to choose. So it's fun talking about this stuff, but it can get murky and we can get bogged down in it. But I think it's fascinating. I really do. I think, if you know, it's unfortunate that our founding fathers, you know, who wrote the Federalist Papers and all that, it's unfortunate, but even then, there are people who were being like, well, I don't know, because way back in the day, I think there was the first line of succession, somebody like Thomas Jefferson could have been an acting president. He was in the line of succession, and, you know, John Q. Adams and other people were like, nah, we don't like him. He's with the wrong party, and we don't want that. So even back in the day, different parties were swabbing.
You have folks who bumped heads. And, you know, that's just like with our rules about being president now, where you can only serve 8 years. And I've heard people say, well, what's wrong with a president serving more than 8 years? There's nothing wrong with it, but Roosevelt was the longest serving president we had.
Yes, he was.
And just so happens, while he was serving as president, and, you know, a lot of people never really talk about it. They kind of downplay it. But Roosevelt, who served from a wheelchair, got a lot done for this country.
Yeah, he did.
He came in during the Depression era, and it wasn't always super great, but he made small strides that turned into big strides, and he really did get the country back on an even keel. I don't care what nobody say.
The New Deal was a deal that was tolerable because FDR also did not count service workers like maids and people like that. I guess today they'd be called gig workers or something like that. But which was unfortunate because the black people who worked in those kind of industries like day maids and stuff like that did not get Social Security. They could not get that Social Security pension. And for a long time they did not. Yes. I think he made that deal with people who were, what do you call them? Well, in the 60s, they were known as Dixiecrats.
In the 60s, so, they were known as Dixiecrats, but that was in the 60s. But, you know, before then, and to be honest, yeah, but you have to look at where the country was at the time. Like I said, it wasn't perfect, but it got the country back to working. We got back on an even keel. I will never downplay the gains that we made during the civil rights era. That corrected a lot of mistakes that had been made. I won't even call them mistakes. It just corrected a lot of wrong that was done beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's not perfect because, again, it's 2023 and we're still having the fight to vote.
Yeah.
And for women's rights, things that had been solved already, we're still fighting that fight.
Right.
Do I think some of these people in the line of succession could step up and maybe help out in that? Yes, I do.
Yes. That would be good if they did, you know, and I really wish that people looked harder at cabinet members and the work that they do. I mean, for example, the sister, and I do believe it's the sister, Marsha Fudge, who is the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. Now, that is a position that is very, very important. And people have to also look at the fact that there are a couple of Hispanics that are on this cabinet in really, really strong positions, Secretary of Education is Miguel Cardona. This other guy, I can't think of the other guy. Fudge, it'll come to me probably later after the show's over and everybody's in. Secretary of Health and Human Services, Xavier Becerra. Those are two heavy-hitting cabinet positions. Men are in those positions, and I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying that it impacts a lot of lives out here.
That's me.
Good job.
I'm going to say the same thing I said Tuesday when we were talking about LaFonza going to the Senate. I don't care about your race. I don't care about your sexuality. I don't care that you're black, Hispanic, or white. You know what I care about? I care about what you do when you step into that office, what you are doing for the people. I care that you are doing what you were elected to do. That's what I care about. And that's where a lot of this silliness comes into play. I heard a Republican gentleman say today? One of the problems is everybody wants to act like we have to be fair and balanced. Well, they weren't fair and balanced back in the day, and people stayed in their place. So I already knew what that was code for.
Stayed in their place. Wow.
But see, this is what you have to understand you're dealing with. They can sit there and speak a good game. Like I say, I hear what you say, but I see what you do. You have a lot of these politicians who step to the microphone and swear that they're for everybody. But when they get in that dark room with their friends, they put that hood on like everybody else. And now you got 20 Republicans being led by Mr. Rick Scott, Mr. I like to defraud welfare and defraud Medi-Cal, talking about there's 20 of us, we're not going to vote for anything. We're going to fight every bill that comes along. But yet you want to say you care about the country. Make it make sense.
They can't. They can't make it make sense. And I really think we as Americans have a wonderful opportunity to kick some political behind in 2024, if we're so inclined to do that. And I think it's going to happen. President Biden was saying just this week that we need to get past all this, hatefulness is going on in Congress right now. And he's right, because how are you going to do that and still be about the people's business of running this country?
Exactly. And I heard him when he said it. Yeah, I heard him when he said it, and you're right. He's right. We do have to get to the business of the people. But it is very clear to me that Republicans do not want to do that. They do not want to do that. I heard somebody say today that Matt Gaetz was like a dog chasing a car. He finally caught the car. Now what he gonna do with it?
I love that visual. That's pretty good.
What are you gonna do with it? He finally caught it. Now what is he gonna do with it?
Yeah.
Well, I heard some other folks say he did all of this because he's trying to bring he wants the attention. He wants to bring attention to himself.
Right.
But again,
I heard that.
Again, what are you going to do? Because, see, the only thing you are showing America is that you're very childish, you have no decency, and you are by no ways a leader.
Exactly. Well, and then you have McHenry, who threw Nancy Pelosi out of her office. Her and Denny Stoyer. Both of them got thrown out. And I'm thinking, how tacky, how trashy is that?
You have to look at the reason why he did it. He didn't do it because he thought of it. He did it because Kevin called him and told him to do it.
Exactly. Well, and that's this is what happens when you don't have leadership, because leadership says, okay, if the person who needs to make these decisions is out of commission, then who's next that we need to ask what to do, voting on party lines. And since the House of Representatives is such in disarray, they don't have anybody to ask. They're looking at Trump, and Trump is busy. But I'm saying that in a situation like that, they should be looking to the heavy hitters in the Senate. And the Senate heavy hitter should be looking to guide them. But Mitch McConnell, the turtle, is being real quiet about all of this. And he's just watching it play out.
The truth of the matter is you can't guide people that don't want to be guided. this is why I love Hakeem Jeffries, because Hakeem Jeffries got smart real fast. He started listening to folks like Claiborne, to folks like Annie Maxine, Chuck Schumer. He started listening to these cats. He started paying attention. And like I said, there was a poll. There was a poll held by someone in the Republican Party who had the nerve to ask, who would you want to be the Speaker of the House? And they threw some names out there. Jim Jordan, Steve Scalise, Hakeem Jeffries. And there was one other person they put on the list. And Hakeem Jeffries was leading the poll at 76%. And this was a Republican poll. But that's they are voting for the Democrats.
Right. Well, that's what happens when you're looking for leadership. It's like, you know, you're looking for a drink of water in the desert. But, you know, this reminds me, what's going on in the House reminds me of a scripture. And I can't remember the number of the scripture. Somebody else can help me out. But it's like when the people have, you know, you don't have a vision, then you perish. The House of Representatives is a house in disarray. And they're doing it to themselves. They don't care who gets hurt. They don't care how they're acting out. This is no way to run a country. Biden said it. All these other people know it. So 2024 is coming. These people need to go. I'm not saying they have to go, but they need to go. And I'm saying that they don't have to go home, but they need to get out of the House of Representatives because they've made a big mess.
You know, I'm going to be real honest with you. 2024, I see a lot of seats changing places. And I'm not saying it's going to be some great, huge blue wave. It might be. But I think voters are going to go to the polls with a different sense of mind, where they went before, like, okay, now it's going to be like, I've seen what they did, and I can't put up with this foolishness no more.
Right. I hope that's true. I really do.
But see, that's just it. And I'll be real honest. We can hope all day long, but the bottom line is we have to do what we do. You have to do your part and hope that other folks do their part. I will always say one of the biggest things that got us into where we are now was them good old white women who swore up and down, oh, we don't like that misogynist. We don't like that. We don't like this. And 55% of them went right in there and voted for that racist misogynist.
Wow.
Who then turned around and did absolutely positively nothing for them.
Well, this is a great opportunity. This is a great opportunity for Americans, you know, rank and file Americans to clean house. And I no pun intended, because we have to make a choice. Either we want a democracy or we want a strong man, fascist-type person running this country. And we can't say this will never happen in America because it's already happening. It's already happening. And, you know, don't get blindsided by this, because this is just slowly building. 45 didn't just walk in the office. He's been talking about this for 20 years before it happened, you know, and
yes,
he's been setting himself up to do this. And for those of you who want to understand fascism better, I recommend that you read Hannah Arendt, A-R-E-N-D-T, first name Hannah, who has written great books about totalitarianism and fascism and all that stuff. Because we could be here all night talking about it, but you know, the fact that we're talking about this line of succession, this is what democracy does. You keep the train on the track. You know, people might not be interchangeable, but if so-and-so gets picked off, who's next to come and help guide the country until somebody else can, you know, be voted in? I mean, the Constitution is a beautiful document, but it doesn't work unless we work it as voters, as participants. So I hope y'all, you know, get out there and vote in 2024 because we need you. Brother Tony's right.
And
your vote is your voice. Yes.
I'm glad you put it that way, Sister Reed, because the truth of the matter is, and I say this all the time, I love when I read little posts and different things from people who say, you know, 45 got in office and he did this and he did that and he did this. But you guys keep forgetting one important element. Politicians do not elect themselves. Voters elect the politicians. And in order for them to get into office, that means some of you had to vote for them. And you can say whatever you want about, well, I voted for him because I like this, but I don't agree with this. In for a penny, in for a pound.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard people say, well, I voted for him because I like his stance on the economy. I didn't vote for the racism part. No, if you voted for one, you voted for the other.
Mm-hmm.
In for a penny, in for a pound. Whatever he doing, you voted for it. I didn't realize that they were going to be separating children from their people. You voted for it.
Yeah.
See,
what did you think?
It amazes me. People like to sit back and act like they don't understand what's going on, what they done voted for. There are still hundreds and thousands of children out there who were separated from their folks during 45's administration, who still ain't went home to their families, have no idea where their families are.
Nope.
Because these folks were snatching them so fast and not getting correct information. We cannot let this madness happen again.
Well, we got people shipping people from the border states to New York, to Vermont. You know, the madness, who would have thunk it that they could be this savage? And I mean that, I'm using the right word, this savage, to take people who do not speak English maybe and send them to a city that where they don't know anybody, they don't have anybody there, and just dump them. That is savage behavior, y'all. And
hey,
okay, go ahead.
I was just getting ready to say, let's flip the script. Say you are Americans living in Mexico, and they did that shit to you. Say you was in Mexico City, and they threw you on a bus and shipped you off to Juarez.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
See, it's all right until the rabbit got the gun.
See? Americans, America being the voice of the free world and want to tell everybody what to do, those days are over. Those days are over, and people are just going to have to accept that. It's over. 45 killed that, y'all. And these judges that got appointed by 45 and this supermajority that they have on the Supreme Court, we're going to be paying for that for decades. Decades.
Yeah, this mess will not be cleaned up in our lifetime. And long after we are gone, it's still going to be the dumb stuff going on. So we got to fight, y'all. And with that being said, I appreciate everyone coming in tonight and listening to us. I know we kind of jumped around, but, hey, I think we gave y'all the idea of this presidential succession.
I think so, too.
I just want to tell everybody I appreciate you for listening, especially my international and my national audience. Y'all do wonders for us. You support our little raggedy show. And we really appreciate that because you could be doing something else.
True.
Sister Reed, feel like it's something you want to say before you take it home?
No, I just want people to make sure that they vote. From dog catcher to president, make sure that you vote. You vote blue. Take your neighbors to the poll with you if they don't have transportation. If you're a motor voter, do it. If you get your mail-in ballot, just take 5 minutes, fill it out, and mail it. Read the initiatives on there. If you only got one thing that you want to vote for, then vote for that one thing and get it done because every vote counts. Every vote counts. That's all I want to say. Is it that time where I'm doing my closing?
It is
y'all
that
know
time.
Everybody, it's about a mindset. Make no mistake about it. It's about a mindset. So with that being said, stay black. Please, I implore you, stay black until we get back with you. Brother Tony?
Yes, indeed. Like I always say, each one, reach one, teach one. Those of you proficient with your arms, take your folks to the range. Get them trained up. Get them licensed. Start a neighborhood watch. Start a cop watch. Watch the people who are watching us. As Sister Reed and I have talked to you tonight, it is 2023. We are getting into the voting session of 2024. It is very important. I don't know how many different ways we can say this, that you vote for everyone from dog catcher to president. Do not skip anyone on your ballot because all politics are local. Sister Reed always says that, and that's a true statement. All politics are local. I don't care if you're looking at somebody on a federal bench. All politics are local because somewhere it all drifts back to what's happening in your little neighborhood. So please, pay attention to what's going on. Speak your piece. Your vote is your voice. Use it. Let no one talk you out of it. Everybody stay strong. Take care of your people. And like Sister Reed said, carpool to the polls. Get folks there. Take people with you. Until next week, everybody stay strong. Take care of one another. We will definitely get at you. We'll holler.